Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season merch madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch, and we're going to give you free shipping on any orders over $200. Stock up your closet for the playoffs, rep your team, and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. Don't wait. This sale only lasts from April 1st until April 7th. Shop the sale at nationgear.ca.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Derek Nasty Settemeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back to Nasty Knuckles. What's happening, Nast?
What's up, Rigorilia? Finally made a men's league game.
Yeah.
Boys were excited to see you. You were moving at about 30%, I would say. It looked like you weren't pushing too hard. I know the knee's still a little banged up, but it was nice to have you join your teammates finally.
Yeah.
We get pushed around a little bit without you and Foxy being there. So.
Yeah, it was nice to be back out. First time on the ice since the old knee injury. And thank God the pace was uber slow.
Not that fast. The pace was not that fast. But next week, it's a different story. We're playing those pesky Blue Devils.
A few of those guys
have called you out. Brian Donahue, J.R. Weed, Nick Sauer. They actually messaged me and said, tell 32 to have his head up. And on a swivel. I said, hey, listen, I'll tell him, but
just tell him that I have no interest in fighting, that I'd just rather smoke the peace pipe with these guys.
You just want to smoke the peace pipe. I get it. But they're asking. They're barking up the tree. So you might have to answer.
All right. Well, we'll see. See if the old Toby, how durable the Toby is over someone's shoulder and collarbone.
Well, I don't think it's going to break.
No.
From what we've seen, the testing.
Definitely not the blade.
The blade will not break. So if you catch one of those in the teeth, it's not good. Hopefully no one does, though.
That's the truth.
Buddy, good start here for the guys in orange and black. I mean, little hiccup for a period, first game. You know, but last night came back with an absolute sound win over the Kraken, our buddy Dave Hackstall. In town last night with a new team, and Flyers just were all over them, and it was a 60 minute effort too.
That was
awesome to see. Like, everyone's on the score sheet the first two games here. Even though you lose the first game, you fall back hard. I know people are like, oh, here we go again, but you know what, you could lay down and die, or you could find your way back in and get a point, and that point may mean something. Scotty Hartnell said the other night on TV, you know, that you come to the end of the year, that one point.
Oh, yeah. It's meaningful.
Could make a difference, man. So.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they just had that second period, just a little drought there. It's four goals against. It's hard to recoup from that, but they salvaged a point, like you said, and little bit of a disappointing loss in the home opener, but certainly an amazing bounce back game last night. And,
for sure.
You know, Carter Hart, a series of big saves there. And then they land, you know, land up going down and scoring, I think the next shift and maybe the shift later, and propelled, you know, the energy forward, you know, good team chemistry, sticking up for each other, sticking up for G. Nice to see G. I mean, G's, you know, leading by example. You know, he's getting in the dirty areas. He's scoring, obviously, showing some emotion. So I'm like what I'm seeing. I know it's only two games in, but nonetheless, they brought the energy last night, and I'm sure Flyer fans are beyond excited for that win.
Yeah, it's I love when G sallies.
Yes.
And so I had to message him, and I said, it's about time or something like that. You know, he's like, yeah, he goes, that place was going nuts. He's like, the fans are unbelievable, which they are here in Philadelphia. I mean, you know, they let you know when things aren't going great, but they were pumped. And I love, you don't see G sally too much, man. And he actually sallied.
Yeah,
he got down and gave her a little punch. I was like, I love that, man. It's too bad he couldn't hang on and find a way to win it. But like I said, man, you fight back like that. You show a lot, and the team has been sticking up for one another. It's only two. We're only two games in. Let's not do what we did last year. We get so excited. Let's just let them keep rolling. But I think they're rolling in the right way here. Last year, I think we could agree they were winning some games, but they weren't playing that great. They played unbelievable last night, and you can't. Oh, it's a new team. Well, Seattle's played everybody tough. They almost beat Vegas. You know, they fought back and tied that game. They end up losing, and they won their next game, I think, in Nashville. I think they dropped one in overtime. But, you know with Dave Haxtell, they're gonna give it all they have every night. So he's a really good coach. Things didn't go his way here, but I think a lot of that people forget that we were kind of in a rebuilding mode when Hack was here. So
that's right.
He didn't really get a fair shake, I don't think. But, hey, he's a coach there. He's a great guy. Good coach, but the main thing is our boys are 1-0-1 and playing well.
That's it. Yeah, strong start to the season. Obviously, a lot of work to do, but I do like what I'm seeing. I'm liking the back end. You know, they're moving the puck so much crisper and more efficiently up the ice, putting pucks to the net, making really strong plays. I mean, it's very obvious that the forwards line up having the puck a lot more, and there's more offensive chances created. So we'll see how it goes the next few games, and see if we can keep this pace up. But
Boston in town tomorrow.
Yeah. All right, Nass, what do you think we jump into this episode 45 with Mark Howe?
Oh, Booger Howe, the Hall of Famer in every category you want in hockey. Let's do it, baby.
All right. This interview is brought to you by Fans of Philly. Fans of Philly is the number one organizer of Philly fan trips of all sports.
Yes, sir. And for upcoming Flyer trips, they are going to New Jersey. That's November 28th. They're going to Arizona December 11th. Seattle Kraken to see our buddy Dave Haxtell December 29th. New York Islanders in January the 17th in 2022. And then Nashville in March 27th in 2022. And please remember that Riley and I are definitely going to be in Arizona for that trip. We're there about 3 days. And then the Nashville trip. Whew, Nashville rigs.
Oh, yeah.
I'm ready for both. I'm ready for the sun in Arizona, and I'm ready to hang out with everybody, and then Nashville as well. So maybe we'll be added into a couple more trips, but definitely check it out and reach out to Fans of Philly.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Should be a blast. All right, Nass, let's go.
Let's go, big boy.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
I'm Derek Settlemyer. This week, we have a very special guest. This gentleman, NHL Hall of Famer, USA Hall of Fame, WHA Hall of Fame, Flyers Hall of Fame, number retired here in Philadelphia, the great Mr. Mark Howe. How are you, Howie?
I'm doing all right. Thanks, Derek. So, hey, Riley, how you doing? So, I don't know about all the Hall of Fame thing. All I know is I would have never scored a goal unless your dad fixed my sticks for me. That's all I know.
Yeah, he would love to take credit for that. He did tell me if you ever got in a slump, and before he even finished, I said, slump? I looked at his numbers. I know who he is. I don't think he was ever in a slump. But he said, well, if he ever had a little one, he would let me fix the sticks for him. I'm like, huh. Okay, well, yeah, I'll give you a little credit then, I guess. But
yeah, I used to walk into his little office. I'd take 3, 4, 6 and throw them at him. And I might be one of the dumbest hockey players ever, because every time he fixed my sticks for me, I did score a goal. But then as soon as I scored, I'd go back to fixing my own sticks. So go figure.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. So what are you up to these days, Howie?
Not much. I retired from scouting at the end of June. I think things got caught up with me. I started playing pro hockey in 73 and I've always given it 100%. I know as I've gotten older, I spend most of my summers trying to work out and get in shape. So you can go out and see 150, 155 hockey games. And I think now, I think all the added responsibilities of doing 2 and 3 hour reports every day, the travel, I think the pandemic and my longtime girlfriend, Sharon, she's been having some issues, health issues. So she needs my help. But that wasn't the primary thing. The primary thing was, I think I just got burned out. So yeah. I know before we got on the air, I was saying that as a player, it hit me one day. And I used to laugh because I used to call my dad when I was hit 38, 39, 40. And I said, hey, Dad, like, how do you know when it's time to retire? And his answer was, you'll know. And I go, wow. I said, Dad, that's like, you're no help. Like, give me a little help here. He goes, I'm just telling you, you'll know. And this is my last year in Detroit. We beat a team convincingly. I played 15, 16 minutes, did my job. I just didn't feel the same anymore. And so on the way home, I called Dad and I said, hey, I get it. I understand what you're saying. I knew it was time to retire. And the same held true for me last year. I knew it was time to get out. Last year was the first time. I scouted since 1995. And wow. It was the very first time where I actually felt like I was working. I mean, the job is, it's too hard and too difficult if you feel like you're working, same as being a hockey player. So, it changed for me a little bit, and that's when I knew it was time to get out.
Yeah. Well, good on you for following your heart. You know, it's basically what it is, right? It's like, you know, it's time to move on, and you're still a young guy. You got lots of life left in you, and you can have an opportunity to enjoy, all the things that life has to offer. Like you said before we got on, there's not a shortage of things to do. And now you can, look back on your career and move on. So there's obviously a silver lining.
Yeah, now I'm waiting on my Social Security checks come in. I wait for my Medicare, it's good. I mean, like, I try to get up every day, and I've never been a huge fitness freak, but I feel better, and it keeps my mind sharper. So yesterday I went for a 7-mile run. Today I did a quick 3 miles, and I didn't have that opportunity when I was scouting. My days were 18-hour days, and you're just consumed. And so you lose a lot of your private time, your private life. So I'm just trying to get as mentally healthy and physically healthy as I can be. And that gives me a better chance at a quality of life. So that's why I'm doing it.
Nice. For sure. I don't think most people realize how much of a grind pro scouting and scouting is in general. I mean, besides the travel and the amount of games you guys see, you kind of touch on a little bit. And then like the reports, I feel like those have probably gotten longer and longer over the years too. Like it's not an easy job, and it's not a short job. Like it's more than a full-time job.
Yeah, you're going at it. And I think, Riley, like it used to be, pretty well you scouted, and it was kind of like the length of the season as the players, and you went to the end of the playoffs, and so you generally had like 3 months off, 3.5 months off, where you had your time on your own, you had a little meetings. But nowadays you're because you're doing so much virtually, you're virtual meetings, you're doing computer scouting, to back up what you're seeing with your eyes. I know if I go back to April last year, I saw 28 games, and I only went to Newark and I only went to Philly. So I'm without the traffic because of the pandemic. I mean, the drives were only an hour each way. But still, I mean, my typical day is, you know, you get up in the morning and try to whack out a 3-hour report. You have maybe an hour or two to yourself. You're cleaning up. You're having a bite to eat at 3 o'clock or so. You're hopping in the car. You go to the rink, and you can't show up at the rink at 7. You're generally there at 5:30, reading notes, doing different things. And when you go and you do the same thing every day. So, like I said, but when they get, the one thing, the advantage of living in this area is you can do a lot of your scouting without getting on airplanes. I mean, the guys are out west, yeah, are on planes all the time, but the disadvantage is you have to go in and you almost have to pluck games off your schedule just because there's so many to pick from. I mean, between going to the island, going to Bridgeport, going to Hershey, Wilkes-Barre, going watching the Phantoms play. I mean, there's a game every single night. And and if you're too tired, you go to a game, you don't see it anyway. So you have to be, I don't know, it used to take me about 3-4 games. It's like a player. You have to get refocused. You have to get right in the proper mindset to do your job right. And so it's a busy job. It's not... Like when I first started in 95, hey, you watched the game, you came back, and your report was, hey, I don't like this guy at all. back then, the Red Wings were such a strong, strong team that I'd go watch some NHL teams. I said, hey, there's only one or two players on that team that could actually improve our team in Detroit. And so the reports were easy. But nowadays, the team's in a rebuild, and you're trying to rebuild within the timeline and the limitations of what they want. I know the program. I strongly believe in what Steve Yzerman's doing in Detroit right now, and he may be the hardest working guy that I've ever seen. Wow. So he's leading by example in the front office, and like I said, that's another reason I quit. The team, Steve Yzerman, everybody else, they need everybody at their best to get that team back on track as soon as possible. And I think for me mentally, it was just tough to make that commitment anymore.
So I got a question. When you do go to the games, this may be a dumb question, but are you looking at someone in particular, or are you just literally looking at every player, making notes on every single guy, even though you're seeing them a lot?
Early in the year, the way they have in Detroit now, if you're going to watch two teams play, you're watching one team. You're watching, so basically 19 guys, unless the goalie's bad, then you see the 20th guy. You try to watch them in warm up, and then now when we study goalies, I mean, they want to know how their movements, how they, cover the post, how they handle pucks, how they do everything. What's right. Their mental attitude, giving up goals, quick goals back to back. But basically you're writing reports on every single player. Wow. Once you get to, usually in January, the end of January, at some point you have your meetings. You narrow your list down and you know where your position is going to be as far as playoffs. And then you start narrowing it down to, you start looking at teams that, so when you're a seller, you're looking at teams that are going to buy, and who do I want off their roster? Who do I want from the American League team? If I don't want any of them, go to the amateur guys, find out what draft picks you can get. So then you narrow it down. And then after that point, then you get into pretty well watching the free agent guys, the UFA guys for the summer. And then it all starts up again at training camp, where you're going and watching exhibition games where everybody's at that stage now where you got to cut your roster down to 43. Is there a player who's going to be available that can come in and make the Detroit Red Wing roster better right now? So it starts right up, basically right at day one. So, even though you have different teams, different managers, it's basically the same process. And I've always had the philosophy that I wish I was right all the time. I know I'm not, but it's never going to be from lack of effort. So right. that's how I approached it as a player. I know I made mistakes every, not every night, but a lot of nights. But like I said, it wasn't from lack of effort.
Right. It's like Riley just said, people don't realize what all goes into that. Like, I didn't even know some of what you just said. That's amazing. That's a lot of work. Yeah,
it's work. But like I said, but to me, it's the same as being a player. I know when I retired, they first had me do the IHL. There was a team in Detroit, the Vipers, run by Rick Dudley, and they were a hard nosed team and played hard, and they were fun to watch. But it was older veteran guys, and they weren't coming back to the NHL. And I went to these games for about 3 months, and then finally, I think in mid December, I went into Jimmy Devolano's office, and I said, "Look, Jimmy, can you give me some real work?" It took me about 3 months to get my hunger back. And you have to have a hunger and a passion for what you do. And like I said, otherwise it's work.
Yeah.
And because you go to the games and I'm running, like, I see Dave Brown, Al Hill. I see a lot of these guys in the ranks all the time. And hey, it's fun to meet up. I'm not much of a drinker, neither of those guys, but the odd time you might have a beer. I remember I ran into my old defense partner, Glenn Cochran, maybe 10 years ago in Nashville.
Oh, wow.
So I had to have at least 5 beer that night. So, I mean, yeah, that's my old buddy Tunes. And so those feelings never go away. So, as much as you build friendships within your teams and that you play for, and even guys you played against, it's the same thing in the scouting world. So it's kind of like it's almost like a union in itself. And you look forward to these guys and you look forward to these guys doing well. And guys that win the cups, like Jamie Pusher's won a couple cups now with Tampa. And hey, when you run into them, you congratulate them just like you would an opponent. So, and that's what the game's all like. To me, it's all about the people and always has been.
Yeah, that's true.
So right.
It certainly is.
I want to talk a little about your hockey career. Obviously, a ton of accomplishments. Numerous NHL awards and records. And I just wanted to go back when you first started in the WHA and you had an opportunity to play with your dad and your brother, I think, for 6 seasons. I learned through Wikipedia that you were a forward before you're a defenseman. And I think there's two different dates here. They're saying that maybe it's between 73 and 79 you were forward, and then you converted to playing defense. But then I read somewhere else in 76, and you're still in the WHA. You want to touch on that and then, you know, what it was like to play with your father and brother in those early years?
Yeah, well, you're not old enough to know anything about my history, Riley. I know that.
Thank God for Wikipedia, man.
I played with Toronto Marlies in the OHL. We won the Memorial Cup as a team in 72, or 73, I'm sorry. 72, I had the pleasure of playing on the U.S. Olympic team, and we won a silver medal in Sapporo. And then I turned pro in the 73-74 season, and they wanted Marty and I, and they were in talking contract with Marty and I, and my dad said, "Hey, how would you like a third how?" And Marty and I still laugh to this day. They took our contracts, threw them off the table, and all they did was talk to Gordy. So I knew my place right away. So it was strange. Like I said, the year before we won the Memorial Cup, I was fortunate enough. I won the MVP of the Memorial Cup.
Wow.
As an 18-year-old. But I didn't feel ready. I was ready for pro hockey yet, whether it be confidence or whatever it was. And, I voiced those concerns to my dad. And the bottom line, he said, "Look, they're paying you." And I signed for $125,000 a year. The 2 years prior, when Dad played Detroit his 25th year, he made $100,000. He said, "You're going to make $25,000 more a year than I ever have in my lifetime. So if I need to, I'll break your arm and sign the contract for you." So the WHA, first off, did so much for players' salaries. So, I mean, it doubled a lot of guys' salaries overnight. And so, I mean, all players should be thankful for that. But what I'm most thankful for is I got to watch Gordie Howe play not just from in the stands, but sitting, well, I wasn't even on the bench. I was on the ice with him. He was either my center or left winger or right winger for 6 straight years. And I benefited being on his left wing. But just to watch him as a 45-year-old, he won the MVP of the league. And I know it wasn't the NHL, but it was still pretty good hockey. And then the next year, he could have easily won the MVP as well. That's how, to me, that's the most amazing thing that I've ever seen in sport. You know, for somebody to, and for the first 2 weeks, like training camp, like Marty and I were really concerned. We didn't know whether he's going to be able to do it or not. We actually went home, told him, my mom, we said, look, we're really, really concerned about Dad here, and I don't know how he's going to do it. And, you know, I guess they sat down, had a talk, and it took him that much time to get his brain back into it. And after that, you couldn't keep up to him. And he was 45. And like, I mean, I was a pretty good skater in my day, but I couldn't keep up with him. He was 45. So, to me, that was my greatest thrill playing hockey. And it's kind of like watching Tom Brady now doing what he's doing down in Tampa. Yeah, so I played forward on his line for my fourth year in Houston. I think I played about 25 games on defense just because we had so many injuries, not enough guys under contract. Then I went back to playing left wing again, and then I basically didn't become a full-time defenseman until my seventh year pro, the year of the merger.
Okay.
And it was kind of, so my, I'll never forget. So we had the morning skate in Buffalo in the Old Odd. And I was on left wing and in the morning skate, came to the rink for the game. And my name was on the blackboard as a defenseman. So I thought the guys were messing around. So I went in, I erased my name and I put it back up on left wing. So, and then the coaches came in, they go, hey, who changed the board? And I said, I'm really playing defense tonight. And they said, yeah, you're playing defense. And I said, well, I wish you would have told me or let me practice once. And my first shift was against Gilbert Perreault.
Oh, my.
My partner pinched in. I had a slide over. He came down one-on-one, and thank God, that puck's going 100 miles an hour. He lost the puck. I laid on it, and I had to change. I was out of breath. So it was a 15-second shift, totally out of breath, just nerve to the max. And that was the beginning of my NHL career as a defenseman. So
wow. That's incredible. That's just like that, hey? Just like throw you back there in the fire, no practice, like. That is amazing, honestly. Obviously they believe in you enough to play back there, but you never see something like that happen in hockey today, where you just throw a guy back there and expect him to be full-time defenseman.
I know Scotty Bowman did that with Sergei Fedorov. I think it was back in 95 or 96, somewhere around there. And so I just happened to be in Dallas watching the team play, and Sergei was out there. And when he was on the ice, like, Dallas never touched the puck. I mean, like, to me, the greatest skater I ever saw in the game was Sergei Fedorov, just because he had every aspect of skating. He was the best at every single category. But he just dominated the game. But Sergei, whether it be Sergei or for whatever reason, he wasn't willing to accept that role. He wanted to be a forward. He wanted to be this, be a scorer and this and that. I received it far better than I liked it, because I went from playing 24 minutes a game to 32 minutes a night. So I loved to be on the ice. And like I said, as a defenseman, I think you can control the pace of the game a lot better. But I think Sergei Fedorov could have easily won the Norris Trophy if he stayed on defense. So, but it was fun. And I don't know, for years and years, I don't know if you guys ever seen it, I've always credited Eddie Van Impe with so much of, any success that I had. Because when I came to Philly, I'd been on defense for a couple of years, but I basically missed almost a whole year because of a real bad injury I had in Hartford, where I got skewered on the net. I came here, my name was being mentioned for the Norris Trophy, and Eddie used to say, what can I teach you? I said, Eddie, nobody's ever taught me anything. So I used to play the games. I used to go to Kaminsky's, have a couple beer, bite to eat, and they would replay the games every night at 1 o'clock. And I knew what plays that I, in my head, that I wasn't happy that I made those decisions. So I'd go back home. I'd watch the replay every single night of the games I played. Wow. And that's how I was trying to learn through my own eyes. Wow. But then when I talked to Eddie Van Impe, and, you know, and nobody would ever confuse our two games. I mean, we're at the opposite poles of the spectrum for sure. So, but, you know, being as hard nosed and, you know, and anybody could come to the net on me. I always said when you came near to the net with Eddie there, you left about 4 inches shorter. That's for sure. So, but he taught me how to play, how he played the game within his limitations. I tried to apply that to me. It made me a smarter player, made me think the game better. And I had definitely had a better skill set than him. And that's what made me a better player. So, he always said, hey, nothing to it, but now he helped me a ton when I came here.
That's awesome. Amazing.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And for your first NHL season to squeeze out 80 points as a defenseman, not too shabby there in Hartford.
We had a not bad team. We had a pretty good line. We had Mike Rogers was a good little player. Blaine Stout was a good sniper, and they had Patty Buteta on the wing. And you know, they would probably be the equivalent of a really good second line nowadays. And you know, and you're not going to score a lot unless you're on the ice with guys that can put the puck in the net. So you know, my job was to what I could do probably as well as a lot of guys, especially in that area, was I could get the loose pucks. I could win that battle first, and I was a good passer. I could put the puck tape to tape, and so you give me two strides, one pass, boom, pucks go on the other way, and
yeah,
and you give it to the right people, and you're going to get points.
Yeah,
I was going to say you're a really smooth skater, a great skater. And funny thing is, my dad would always tell me you barely tied your skates. He's like, you'd come off and kick them off like tennis shoes. And I was like, wow, like that's crazy.
Yeah, well, they're big. I used to lose a little bit of circulation. My legs, calves would tighten up. Actually, back in the day of the old tube skates, we were playing a game in Minnesota against the WHA team. So I go behind the net, and a guy checked me into the back of the net, and then I laid there. Well, they blew the whistle. The trainer come running out, and he goes, "You okay?" I said, "I'm fine." He said, "Why didn't you get up?" I said, "My skate fell off."
Yeah.
So what happened? So the back part of the tube, back part of my blade caught in the netting, and my foot came out of my boot. So I'm not going to go down the ice with one skate, yeah. one skate and a sock on. So yeah, that's kind of how loose I used to keep them.
That's funny.
That's incredible. That might never any other time in hockey history.
I don't think I've ever seen a skate come off.
Yeah, no. So it was kind of funny. Well, even, and like I said, so I used to laugh at training camp. So, cause when we came to camp, I generally didn't skate before camp. I used to, you know, I did a lot of training on a bike. I got my legs as powerful and I could get my heart to recover as fast as I possibly could. And then I knew I was ready, and it would take me by day three, it took me for my ankles to start getting a little stronger again, where you could go without any support. So, and like, even to this day, I mean, I hate the skates they make nowadays. I used to wear some old Easton skates. They were made out of kangaroo leather, and they might cost you $25, $30 at the store. Then they quit making them. You couldn't find them anywhere. Well, every city we went to, I'd go to a sporting goods store, and I think I bought up seven, eight pair of my size that I could find. And that's what I ended up using the rest of my career.
Wow.
So
I didn't know.
Incredible.
Wow. I know one thing, where you skated so well, I'm sure it's easier for a guy like you, but, and you were in good shape too, but you played a lot of minutes. And I remember one funny thing, when we had that outdoor game in 2012, the alumni played the day before the Flyers played the Rangers. And my dad was working the game with you guys. So I sat beside him just outside of the bench, and you and him are kind of going back and forth. And Howie wasn't even like breathing heavy. He's like, "I'm not playing enough. Like we need more." And Sam, I think you were playing with Sammy, if I'm not mistaken. He's like, "Shut the fuck up, I'm tired." You know? Yeah, right. And Howie's like, "There's not enough ice. Like I'm ready to go." You know, but it was kind of funny. But I know you guys, I remember Sammy saying before too, like, basically in the playoffs, they were just throwing you out every other shift, you know, back in the day, that is, when you were playing with him.
Yeah, well, Sam was a heck of a player. He was another guy I played with. I don't think he got near enough credit. I know how good he was. I think we lost game seven to Washington in Washington one year. I think there was a year we were up 3-1 and then lost out. And I think it went like 8 or 9 minutes of the first overtime period. Well, Sammy played 51 minutes. I played 49. Wow. So I was in the penalty box for two. So, yeah, and it's a ton of ice time. But, hey, I'd rather do that. To me, that's a lot easier than having to sit the bench and go out and play one or two shifts a period. To me, and even at the end of my career, like I said, if I'm playing 5 minutes a period, there's too much time for your mind to wander when you're sitting on the bench.
Yeah.
So, but when you do it the other way, you come to the bench and, like I said, you try to get your heart rate down as fast as you can. And within 15, 20 seconds, you're going out again. But I think the biggest key is if you don't take extended shifts, I think you can play that many minutes. So if you get caught out there in a long shift, I think it affects you probably the rest of the period. So you try not to get caught out there.
I
remember that that series you're talking about. You guys were up, and you were up 3-0 in that game.
Yeah,
and Dale Hunter scored in overtime. I believe it was Dale Hunter scored in overtime. But you snapped one. You snapped the wrister by Pete Peters. I'll never forget. I was a kid, but I was somewhere watching the game, and you snapped one. It was in and out of the net for Pete because he'd come out, you know, and just stand there. But he cut the angles down. Riles, do you even know who Pete Peters is? But anyway, Pete played in Philly too. Pete played in Philly, but he used to come way out and cut the angles down. But how he snapped one by him, it was in and out of the net. I just remember being we were at this restaurant. I was going nuts, 3-0, and I had some guys that were from Baltimore that were Caps fans, and I'm talking so much shit, and now it's 3-1, 3-2, 3-3. I'm like, oh, yeah, they end up losing. Just should have kept my mouth shut. But anyway, you logged a lot of ice time. My dad would always tell me about that as well.
Yeah, well, when Mike Keenan first signed as a coach here, the first thing he did, he went and met all the players in the summertime. So I remember he said, where do you want to go? I said, well, I'll meet you at Kaminsky's. I'll go have lunch there. So we sat and had a sandwich and, you know, we talked about things. And he said, well, you know, what do you want from me? And I said, the only thing I want from you, I said, I'd like a chance to play more. I said, I think I could help the team have success if I get an opportunity to play more. And he looked at me, he said, well, you'll get a chance. Your job is to be ready. And I said, well, don't worry, I'll be ready. And so we had our first 3 days of camp. Then I think we had a game in Hershey on day four. We're playing, I think it was Montreal. And he played me 16 and a half minutes of the first period.
Oh, wow.
And we're up 4-5-0. I had 4 or 5 assists. And I was ready to go. But I was on cloud nine. I was having one of those games where, like my feet weren't touching the ice that night. And everything's going good. But I remember coming in after the first period, I sat down. I said, if I didn't pass the test, nobody ever will.
Right.
So, but you know, but then Mike let you know who he was right away the next day at practice. He rode me harder than anybody. So he was in my face so far into my kitchen. Yeah. But that's how he was. Mike wanted to let you know that no matter what you did, no matter how good your game was before, means nothing. It's what you're going to do after this. And, so we kind of set our boundaries right on day three.
Wow, that's interesting. You mentioned playing 16 minutes, and then, you know, a couple minutes ago you talked about playing 5 minutes a period. You know, you weren't really in the game. How would you have played if you played 5 minutes a game?
I don't know. Like I said, it would have been really hard. Like I watched, you know, and I have a lot of respect for guys that play 5 minutes. I don't know how you do it. Like, it's really hard. Like, even that game I was talking about in Hershey. So I got tested. So I got played 16 and a half minutes of the first period. Now in the second period, I barely touched the ice, but now there's two other guys. Now it's their chance to do their test. Right. Well, they've sat there for 40 minutes already.
Yeah.
So for me, I had the best opportunity because when the game started, everybody's mentally set and ready to go. And that's when I got to play. So, like I said, as you get older, your role gets reduced. And believe me, I got beat by Mario and Wayne and Mess and Trotche and those guys from time to time. And you got embarrassed sometimes. But I'd rather play 30 minutes and get embarrassed by those guys than have to sit the bench and watch somebody else do it. And then as you get older, hey, the young guys come along and then it's their role. And I think that's probably what I missed the most. I didn't have the responsibility, nor did I deserve the responsibility because I couldn't respond as well anymore as a player.
Yeah, no, it's that's interesting. But, you know, I get it. I mean, everyone wants to play more. You want a bigger role, and you are engaged more in the game. It makes a ton of sense. You know, getting burnt by the best players in the world is not a bad thing, right? It's just part of the game. You'd rather be the guy that gets burnt, like you said, because you're in the game, and that's just the way it goes, and then watching someone else get burnt.
Yeah, no. So I remember the – I think it was 88 or 89, Homer was coaching us, and anybody who played with Homer knows him. Like, he's your ultimate flyer and warrior, and to have him behind the bench, I mean, he was a great guy to have behind the bench. And he didn't come down on you real hard most of the time, but every once in a while he'd let his feelings be known. We had a game in Pittsburgh and Mario standing behind me on the blue line. The red line was still in play. And I think it was Samuelson's bringing the puck up. And I said, he's making a Western Union play. I mean, you could read it from 50 feet away.
Yeah.
And so, and I got Jagr on one side, Stevens on the other. So I said, let me just stand in front of Mario. I go, I'll break this play up. And I know I could outskate all three of them. So I'm standing in front of him. Mario's way behind me. And but now the pass comes. I got my stick there, my foot there, my leg there. There's no way that puck's getting through, no matter how bad it bounces or anything. So I'm just going to block it, and we'll go the other way, 4-on-2, and they're not going to back check. And sure enough, the stick comes over my shoulder, and with the tip of his stick, he touches the ice like this, and the puck goes in the air over my shoulder. He goes in on a breakaway and Hexie, and Hexie makes a save. Of course, they change, come to the bench. I'm sitting there, and Homer's giving me like, yeah. what are you doing kind of look.
Yeah.
And I looked at him. I says, tell me when you've seen that before. I said, well, and that's part of the game. So I said, okay, I can do this on any other player in the league, but I can't do it against Mario. So you learn. I said, now Mario's there. I got to go on the other side. That's just one of many times that you get embarrassed to do whatever, but I go, that's part of playing against great players. They do things that other guys just don't do.
Yeah, that's for sure. Speaking of Mike Keenan, my dad was telling me that you used to love when him and Ilka would go at it a little bit. And Ilka told me some stories too, God rest his soul. My dad said you kind of got a chuckle out of that once in a while.
Oh, well, Mike went out with everybody. Poor Scotty.
Yeah, that's true.
Poor Scotty. Scotty Mellenby used to get it too. There was the funniest one with Ilka is you had to know Ilka. You had to know his personality. And a lot of the European guys are they're more laid back. They don't take it as much to heart. And if they do, they just don't show it. Ilka was one of those guys who, we're playing in Vancouver. We're getting smoked like 4-1 or something at the end of the first. We're horrible. And Mike starts going around the room one by one by one. The first guy I laid into was Dave Poulin. And he goes, you're the captain. And I got to leave out all the words, but he said, you're the captain of this hockey team. And he says, you got 6 goals. He says, it's December 28th. You got 6 goals. 5 of them are in the empty net. Like, what kind of leader are you? And by all he's just ripping into Dave big time. He works his way to Scott Mellenby. And he says, Jesus, he says, I sent you home. He said, I sent you home to eat turkey. He says, what'd you do? Eat the whole effing turkey. He said, your face is redder than a baboon's a-hole. I'm like, was sitting there, so poor. And then, you know, that was just the buildup of it. So, you know, like, he's going through and he's ripping him a whole bunch of other stuff. And he's working his way around. Now, mind you, at the far end of the room, there's myself and Brad McCrimmon. Now, I realized I was probably the worst player on the ice that day. And so I'm just waiting for him to get to me. And I said, oh, this is going to be just unmerciful. And but just before me is Ilka. So he gets to Ilka and he's saying all this stuff to Ilka, just ripping into him. Like, coach would be fired like all day, every day right now for saying the stuff he was saying to Ilka. And then he looks at his stats. He goes, 22 goals. He goes, how on God's green earth do you have 22 goals? And being sarcastic, and Ilka, in his own way, he goes, power play. So just in his way. And well, if you're in the locker room, we start cracking up. So I got my glove. I got tears coming down my eyes from laughing so hard. Well, the old benches or the training tables in Vancouver, I don't know what they're made out of, like cast iron or whatever. Keenan gets so ticked off, he turns around and kicks the table. Well, he turns bright red. I know he broke his toe that day. Oh. And we all started laughing at him. Just started laughing. He goes walking out of the room hobbling. We're crying in tears. He comes running back in. He goes, you SOBs, you're going to pay for this. You're going to pay for this tomorrow. And we go, oh, God, we better knuckle down and win this game because that's going to be – well, we – so, yeah, but, yeah, it was – and. Yeah, those stories, they were a dime a dozen with Mike. They happened all the time. Oh, so wow. Kept things interesting.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I've heard you guys tell some of them. You're right. Like, you could say what was being said.
He never got grilled in that roast there. He saved by the broken toe.
Yeah, I know.
That's pretty
so
good.
But, like, yeah, and I've always given Mike a lot of credit too for there's no other way I get in the Hall of Fame. There's no way my number's up in the rafters if it's not for Mike Keenan giving me the opportunity and also for pushing me, letting me know that being really good once in a while is not good enough. You got to just bring it every night. And, I guess there's a lot of days I wanted to just beat the living tar out of him. I've had him stand next to the boards. And, like, we had a couple of skates where he's just in my ear and he's going, oh, it's too hard for you. And, like, my back would be really bad. And he's going, oh, why don't you just quit? You deserve a rest. Like, really sarcastic. And then after about an hour and a half skate or whatever, and he'd be standing next to the boards. And if he would have moved a half an inch, I would have broke his shoulder. He'd just come over and you two hand. I was letting him know I wasn't very pleased with how things were. But that was the relationship. And Mike knew how to get under people's skin, and you could obviously get under mine that way. But I respected Mike enough. I got an invite to somebody who's going down to see him a couple of years ago. I know Mike had his cancer, and we had meetings down in Florida. And I said, hey, if I get an afternoon, I said, if Mike's willing to see me. So then they said, yeah, Mike would love to see us. So I drove down, went and saw him in Key West and shook his hand. And I said, well, for treating me like crap for 4 years and doing this and doing that, I said, you owe me dinner and drinks all night, and then we'll be set. So we just smiled, shook hands, and, yeah, he bought my dinner and bought my drinks. So,
there
you go. But, yeah, Mike had a lot to do with the success of the teams we had in the mid-80s for sure.
Yeah, you guys were good.
That's pretty impressive that you can have someone ride you that hard for so many years. And to hear this, we've actually had a few guests that have had – Mike is a coach and, you know, similar stories, but to be able to put that behind you and actually appreciate how hard he is pushing you and to identify that him actually helping your career along and going to bury the hatchet several years later is pretty, you know, it's pretty impressive. You know, it takes a lot of, just the human essence to do that, because I feel like a lot of guys could go the other way and be like, I don't ever want to see that guy again because he, you know, he's got my confidence in my back pocket or whatever else, but. You know, you gotta move along in life and appreciate that, because I've heard this a lot of times from guys speaking about Mike as a coach. So,
yeah, no, he was especially the young guy. I know, another guy, God rest his soul, Peter Zettel. Peter used to get ridden so hard, and And I think probably what eventually happened was it went through the whole team. And then after a while, you start losing the players.
For sure.
And I remember with me, I room with Ronnie Sutter every year at training camp. I have a ton of respect for Ron Sutter and the Sutter family and their work ethic, and not the most naturally gifted athletes, but just tenacious and great character. And you can't say enough good things about them. And we were playing the Islanders one day, and, so we had Ronnie and Rich, and, they got the dog and puke playing on their team, and that's their names for them. But Ronnie lost a face off to his brother. And so puck went back to the point. Guy took an innocent shot, and goalie grabbed the puck, and it was a nationally televised game, and Keenan decided to make an example of Ronnie. And Ronnie, he changed his sentiment and had Ronnie come over to the bench. Well, he wouldn't let him on the bench. And he said, just get out of here. Just go up in the locker room, take your equipment off. And I know for me and a few other guys were sitting there, it's like after a while what happens, because I think we were such a tight-knit group of guys, it just starts to tear your heartstrings. And even though it's not happening directly to you, but it's happened to somebody you care about and sure. Somebody that's got a lot of character. Yeah. I think that was probably the demise for Mike Keenan in the Philadelphia, where just like it finally spread through. And I know Dave Poole and Brad Marsh, McCrimmon and myself, we were all the belief, no matter how wrong the coach is, he's right. That's how we were brought up. That's right. How most guys are brought up. And you live with that. And yeah, you got to bite your tongue a lot of times, but Mike did that all the time. But I think eventually it got to everybody and wore everybody down.
Yeah. I've heard that before. And I've seen that with other coaches too. I mean, you can only spread yourself like that for so long, and then eventually guys tune out. I mean, that was a little bit more old school than you see in this day and age. But you see the guys the coaches with shorter shelf life is because of how hard they push and eventually go through the team, and no one buys into it anymore. But you get what you need out of the guys during that fresher times of the coaching existence there, and then eventually it takes its toll and wears off there. But seems to have had success, especially early on there in his career. And I know that coaching method doesn't really work today, but I still hear a lot of positive things
I asked for something when he gave it to me, so I appreciated it. I tried to respond the best I could, but. Yeah, but Mike, even the All-Star game up in Hartford, our fourth line was Timmy Kerr, Michel Goulet, and Mario Lemieux. And with 10 minutes to go in the game, he benched the line because he's trying to win. So I'm sitting there. Derek, you're referring to the outdoor old-timer game in Philly. So after the game, I made sure I stayed in the hotel so I could have a couple of cocktails, not be drinking or driving. And I wanted to hang with a couple of guys I knew from New York. And, if any of the Flyer guys were there, then I just wanted to have a good time. Yeah. So after the game, I'm with Brian Leach and a bunch of these guys, and we're shooting the breeze. And they're going, yeah, like Mike benched half the team in the third period because Mike was trying to win. So they were cursing and swearing. They said, oh, good riddance to this guy. We can't stand this guy. I said, hey, but you guys won a cup with him. We said, I don't care if we won 20 cups with him. Like, and I said, well, he's benching guys in an alumni game. And I'm like, well, that's the ultimate Mike Keenan right there.
Yeah.
Jeez, man. Oh, man, that's beautiful. That's- Nasty, you got a couple of sudsy stories, don't you?
Well, I just wanted to. Dad told me, like, you guys, when you were able to get out around the area, he said you guys would go out for a bit, maybe Kaminsky's, but he's like, yeah, we usually try to once a month come back to my place for my mac and cheese. Yeah. Now, hang on a second. I know my dad isn't a chef, so I have to think that he was Kraft macaroni.
Hey, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you got the munchies. Kraft mac and cheese was pretty good in the day. Like, who are you kidding if you don't know who that is? Come on now.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, but he's trying to act like it's some, like he's making this from scratch, And I'm like, dude, you cooked for me, and it was hamburger helper. and yeah. you know, macaroni and cheese, but there's nothing to your macaroni and cheese. It's not even.
No, yours. I think you added a little water, did something, and yeah, whatever. Right? yeah. I needed some food in me. Yeah, so we had a good time. Like, well, the other thing I used to laugh at was like, if I had a dump all the player, every once in a while I'd get wound up a little too tight within my own head. And once you get into your own head too far, it's not a good thing. So Keenan would recognize it, and he used to grab your dad and grab Kurt Munt, and he'd say, look, go take Howie, get him drunk, do something with him. So, yeah, we spent a few nights out having a good time. But, yeah, and then, yeah, you go out, you have a good time, you relax, and sooner or later something good happens. The piano falls off your back, and you're back to playing normal again. But, yeah, so, yeah, your dad had a big job description from doing sticks to get me out to try to learn to relax a little bit. So it was a little bit more than feeding me, a little bit more than just training. So,
Riles, you had one that you bits and pieces.
Yeah, so I remember hanging out with Sudsy a few times, and I got bits and pieces of the story, but it was you and Sudsy on the road. I think it was last call, and Sudsy orders 21 VO and Diet Cokes.
Yeah.
What's the storyline on that one?
Yeah, that was in Calgary. So he, they gave us last call. I think it was like 1:45, I think it was. So he ordered 6 VO and Diet Coke, and they came by like 5 minutes later. He said, okay, you got to drink them up. And well, his is already gone. And he said, we never got last call. And she said, what do you mean you never got last call? I just gave you 6 drinks. I never got last call. Sorry, what do you want for last call? He said, well, I want 15 VO and Diet Coke. Well, he drank all 21. So that was one of the nights where the coaches told him to get me smashed. So I think he was the one that got smashed. So, but yeah, we still laugh about that whenever we run into each other. And I always say, yeah, get another 21 VO and Diet Cokes. How about it? So
how do you get up and go to the
That's a lie.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
That's insane.
That's really old school, right there. That's a lot of alcohol, especially last call. You know, 21 drinks right before you shut it down.
That's in the last 15 minutes. And when I hit 2, I mean, when the doors closed, everything's up at 2. So that was within 21 drinks within 15 minutes. So it was pretty impressive. Wow. So
21.
Whew. Wonder how that night ended for him.
He probably can't tell you.
Well, no, I'll tell you. So we called a cab, and the cab pulled up. We got in the cab. He pulled up about 20 feet to a stop sign, took a right, went to the next stop sign, took a right, and we were at the hotel. We didn't know we were at the back of the hotel. That's how that night stand-up started out.
Oh,
so
my
just,
God.
Just to give you I'm surprised the cab even came to pick us up. So,
oh, man.
But we got home safe, so.
Yeah, right? That's all that matters.
I didn't know that part of it.
Oh, I know.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, man. Wow. It's classy. I want to go back a little bit. We're talking with Shel Samuels, and I, you know, the privilege of playing for him, both as assistant and head coach, and then worked with him for several years when he was doing, you know, the development stuff with the Phantoms and Flyers. And I know Sammy to be a yeller, old school, you know, intense, and you know, loves to just yell. I mean, being a partner of his for however many years you play with him, how did that go? How did you deal with old Sambo?
We used to call him Duke after Marmaduke, going boom, 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 all the time.
Big Duke, yeah.
So he was chirping with us quite a bit. We had to learn how to play together. And part of it was like, well, you know, his range and reach and his mobility was actually really good for a big man. Whereas normally you take away the middle of the rink and steer the guys to the outside. With Sammy, I said, look, I'm going to go wide. I'm going to steer him to your side. They're not going to get around. I said, just get a piece of the guy for a half a second. I'll go get the puck and boom, we'll be going the other way. So I changed things up a little bit when we played together. But part of when Sammy came here was guys used to take runs at him all the time. And I think we were in it maybe 2 weeks in or something like that. And we all said, look, next time a guy comes to hit you, and back then you could defend yourself. I said, just take your stick and put it through his face. I don't care what you break. Sooner or later, this guy's going to quit running at you. And so he was a big, strong man, yeah. 245, 250 pounds. So he gave a guy such a vicious cross check one day. He got 5-minute penalty. I said, don't worry. Our job is to kill the penalty. So we killed the penalty. Next game, another guy runs at him, put a stick through his face. And next game, another guy run at him, put a stick through his face. And I'm going, okay, time out. Like, I think the league has a message. And yeah, well, because I'm a guy, like, I don't know if he broke his nose or whatever. I said, you just have to do it. I wasn't big enough or strong enough to drop my gloves and beat the crap out of somebody. So my defense was, if somebody's trying to hurt me, hey, if I take out your teeth or if I break your nose or whatever it is, I'm just doing a self-defense. And so on. But sooner or later, I remember it was an all-star game. Kevin Dineen, who I knew when he was like 4 or 5 years old, running around in the Houston locker room, because Bill Dineen was my coach. And first all-star game, a regular season game, well, Kevin runs at me. And play stops. And I said, Kevin, I said, don't be running at me. I said, you're not going to like it. So he took a second run at me. And I said, that's it. And I said, it's all over with. I said, next time you run, you're going to get hurt. And so next time, here he come with his head down running at me again. And I went right for the middle of his mouth. I just as hard as I could. And he just turned away at the last second. My stick went down his neck and ended up breaking his collarbone.
Wow.
And so Billy Dineen called me the next day. And Bill says, hi, Mark. He says, what are you doing to my boy? I said, Bill, I gave him 2 free shots. I said, on the third one, I said, like, if you do it again, you're going to really pay a price. And Bill answered to me. He said, well, he says, yeah, he never listened to me either. So, yeah, he just so but back in the day, that was how, I think when you got to playoff time, then, your job was the hardest thing about playing defense at 185 pounds was you got some guy that's 220 coming at you or whatever. The puck's in the corner. And you're going to get smoked. My job is to advance the puck 5 feet. Right. I need somebody to be there. Now, if that guy wasn't there to support me and then somebody to support him, then I'd start ripping on those guys. I said, I'm taking a beating for you to be here to do your job. And but I think in a regular season, try to protect yourself a little bit more. But in the playoffs, you had to grin and bear it, bite it for the good of the team. And, that's just what you did.
Wow. I didn't realize you're the one that taught Sammy how to protect himself and putting sticks in people's faces. Cause I remember him over and over and over again, telling a young defenseman with the Phantoms is like, defend yourself. You just put your stick in his face and shove it down his throat. I didn't realize you were the one that taught him that.
Well, basically that was the whole team and all the guys that play with them. So, we always used to tell them, look, we got your back. Right. Like I said, we will, because, you kill good penalties. You don't kill bad. Bad penalties just, they have a tendency to puck ends up in the net on the power play. But
yep.
I said, we'll have your back. We'll take care of you. I know we had, the hard part was, so we roomed together a lot of times. The one year in the playoffs, they kept us up in New York. And we stayed at that old New Yorker hotel across the street, and Shell had a little bit of a tough game. We lost. So I was with Prop and McCrim, and I said, you guys got to come with me back to the room. I go, I can't go back to that room alone because I know Shell's been in there. I know he's just fuming. And so he just beat it right back to the room. And so they walk in the room with me, and we weren't in there 5 seconds, and it's boom, 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 boom. He's going, well, and it's funny because I think the beds in there were maybe 6 foot long, and so his head against the headboard, his feet, feet are off the end of the bed. So, but it took maybe 5-10 minutes. He got it out. He relaxed. We went to bed and went back at it again the next day. Oh, but, I run into Shell a lot. And like I said, I like the guy. He was one of the best partners I ever had. And a heck of a nice person, really good guy. So, Yeah, it's, and Flyers are lucky to have him around as long as they have.
Yeah, man, he's still going strong. It's it's pretty impressive. You know, you don't hold on to a job that long, and you know, in the same organization very often. But he's a passionate guy. You know, he's seen the evolution of the game, and I think, you know, I think he's got he's intense and says what's on his mind. But then he's like the first one to almost pat you on the back and like everything's okay. I think he's got a short memory when it comes to some of this frustration and emotion that he carries. So I think it translates well with the young guys because he wants to win. He wants to develop young players.
Yeah, I think, yeah, and it's like I would probably assume it's somewhat close to like when I ended up being a player under Paul Holmgren, where yeah, their emotions get out there and they're right there on the tip of their tongue, and but they're good people. Like,
right.
And as a player, I love playing for, like, you'd go for a wall for a coach like that. And yeah, like, and as you get older, you just say, look, sometimes you got crap, but you deserve the crap. So, hey, sure. Just let it fly. And here you go. And let's get back to work for the right cause. And yeah, but like I said, and Shell and I remember one time on the bench, we had a 2-on-2, I screwed up. And they go in there 2-on-1, they score the goal. He come back and he started to chirp me. And I just quickly snapped at him. I said, don't ever chirp me, pal. So I said, you know, I'm your partner. I said, forget, you know, I got your back, you got my back. I said, no. Don't ever, like, I said, we're a team here. And it was a tiny little, small little incident, put a stop to it right away. And like I said, like, other than Brad McCrimmon, Shale Samuelson was the best partner I ever had all my years of playing as a defenseman. So
that's awesome.
that speaks volumes of how good he was.
Yeah.
And speaking of the late, great Brad McCrimmon, what an incredible human being he was. And I know you guys were very tight. And I just remember as a kid, he just made me fucking laugh. Like, he would say shit probably shouldn't have been saying in front of a 10-year-old kid, but I thought it was great because, you know, I'd go home to, hey, I got the one time I got there, for some reason, Sudsy threw me on the bus with you guys up to MSG. I don't know why in the hell he did it. I guess I couldn't fit. I don't know if I couldn't get in the truck. I don't know what it was. But I just remember Beast, like, changing into, like, basically taking his dress shirt off and then just having some shorts on. And he said something to me I won't say. You know, he was being funny. And I'm like, oh, this guy's awesome, man. He's wild, you know. But he was awesome. And even when I was with the team and we would go into Detroit and he was the assistant coach there, he would just always come over. He ended up being over there with us for an hour, just shooting the shit, talking about everything. He was awesome. He was so awesome.
Yeah. So I'm a heck of a player, heck of a partner. And, but we roomed together for 3 years and a ton of laughs together. As you know, like I said, well, like every time we got on the bus trip, Brad and I sat at the very back. They used to allow you to have a couple cases of beer on the bus, and that, we were in charge of the cooler because we were the older guys. And so Brad used to sweat like a stuffed pig. So as soon as he got on the bus, I'm sure you heard the stories. He'd have a little pair of shorts that he used to wear. So off came all the clothes. He'd put on his shorts. And if you needed a beer, you had to see Brad. So I know. It's like, I don't know, every year. But Brad was like an ultimate teammate. It was always about team, never about stats. Do what you got to do for the team. And I know, like, he always did a lot and being roommates, like whenever we'd be out in California. So I know we'd try to send, you know, your dad and Kurt and whoever out a few days early, give the trainers a little added, I guess, couple days on the road. Then we'd show up and, you know, if you're in LA, we'd stay at the LAX Marriott for 5 days. And we had one rule in place. And before you came to bed, you had to come by a room and have a beer with us. So we did whatever we could. So we made sure we didn't use the bath much. We made sure we showered good at the rink, and we had the beer on ice in the tub. And yeah, guys would come in, and it was good. It just makes for good camaraderie. So
100%.
We had good. Brad was a great guy, and yeah, I miss him. Because we used to talk probably 2-3 days a week. For all these years. And then, you know, I was one of the guys that said, hey, go get a head coaching job somewhere. And yeah, when I heard about the tragic plane crash, but he died doing what he loved doing. And you miss him. But yeah, he's one of the best people I ever met in my life. So
Well, Howie, I know we taken up some of your time here on this this Tuesday morning, so we really appreciate you hopping on and sharing some stories, some laughs. Amazing career.
Unbelievable.
And, yeah, and just appreciate all you've done for hockey and your family and everything else. So thanks for the time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Derek and Riley. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll be running into you guys soon. So I know I think Marshy's got me lined up to play in the alumni game. I think they're playing in like a month or two, something like that. So
yeah, I'll see.
So
you
I don't know. He's gonna dread me putting on skates again. So I'm like, oh, God, am I?
Tell him you 30 minutes or you're not in. 30 minutes ice. No.
My goal nowadays is just to get through a game without hurting too bad the next day. Yeah, so right? Like,
that's
boy, it's you turn 66, 67, and things change a little bit. So yeah, so we're but yeah, looking forward to it. And like I said, I'm having a little bit of free time now. There's you know, there's a lot of things in my life that I wasn't able to do. You had to turn down, whether it be doing stuff to help people for charities, different things, and but it's time where I can do some things I haven't had a chance to do, go out and enjoy them. And like I said, it's always great to be in a locker room and see a bunch of guys that you bled with and sweat with for a lot of years. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be fun. We'll I think we'll be there. My old man was telling me about the game last night as well. Like, I think he's coming up to help you guys out. So looking forward to that.
I'll be there as well.
All right, guys. Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you again so much.
Yeah, thanks
so much.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Nasty, are you ready to take your hockey game outdoors? For over 50 years, Mylick has been taking the game of hockey to the streets, driveways, and cul-de-sacs across the globe.
Listen, Riggs, I'm ready. And I'll tell you what, they're featuring their MK5 shin pads that are the number one selling off-ice hockey shin pad in the world, brother. And I got a pair. Unreal. That's why I'm so fast. Yeah, you're going with none. Should have had these. MK5 are second to none, bro. But listen, also, they have a lineup of hockey goals ranging from the light PVC goals that you probably used to shoot on. I couldn't because I'm like, because I got that bomb with the Toby. Yeah. All the way to regulation pro steel goals. So you can take your pick there.
And the old orange ball that started it all has evolved into multiple hockey balls scientifically designed to perform consistently in a variety of weather temperatures. You know all about that, Nast.
I do. And I'll tell you what, Mylick also has a wide selection of hockey sticks for any type of playing surface, bro.
No doubt Mylick has all of your off-ice hockey needs covered.
For sure. Guys, listen, visit Mylick.com and use promo code NASTYKNUCKLES to get 10% off of your next order. Mylick. Hockey starts here. Let's go.
You know it, Nast. A big thank you to Mark Howe for hopping on the pod. Amazing guy, amazing career. It was nice to reconnect with him.
Unbelievable guy. Hall of Famer in every which way. Anyway, in hockey, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he really is. And amazing stories. You know, obviously play with some of the best players to ever play. But, you know, especially when you're following daddy's footsteps, and there's obviously a ton of pressure and expectations, and I think as a son of a superstar, he certainly exceeded those you know, on many levels. So nice to hear from him.
It's so nice. Him and as we mentioned, he and my dad are really good friends, and so I've been fortunate enough to know him a long time. But it just, like, just a regular guy, man. I mean, this guy, you know, not that, you know, most hockey players are, which is a great thing about our sport. But, like, what a great guy. I mean, this guy's Gordie Howe's son, Hall of Famer himself, and right, just, you know, could make fun of himself, and he's just a great guy, man. So it was great having him on, man.
Yeah, he's definitely humble. You know, I think you mentioned it before we hopped on the pod, or just he almost minimizes how much he's accomplished in the game and almost just pretends it never happened. But you know, it's nice to see a guy with that much success just be, you know, humble and thankful, and, you know, and just appreciative of his experiences and stuff like that. So it was nice to see him again and connect with him on a different level. And
yeah,
look forward to seeing him at the alumni game on November 15th.
You better sharpen up the knucks.
I got to sharpen up the skates too, man.
Why didn't you give me your skates, by the way? That's another story. We'll worry about that. You need new skates.
I definitely need new wheels.
Come on over to Settlemyer Skate Sharpening. It's in the studio. Anytime you're ready.
I know, right? Oh, man. Don't you worry. I'll be there sooner than later. I really need a grind.
You do.
Badly. After a couple of spills the other night. All right, Nas. Well, that's a wrap. Episode 45 in the books. Appreciate it again, Mark Howe. And be sure to tune in next week for episode 46. Until then, stay safe and have some fun.
See you, knuckleheads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.